You're listening to Hunter Valley Today with Darren Katrupi. Yesterday, Lisa Ryan from Animal Liberation joined me to discuss what she was concerned about out of my interview with the now newly appointed CEO of Greyhound Racing New South Wales in our very long chat last week about the proposed 400 kennel facility at Martindale. Well, the residents of Martindale have had time to digest all that was said over that half an hour of talking, and they've got some points they want to raise. So obviously it's only fair that I give them a right of reply, because they certainly don't agree with a lot of things that was said by Rob in our chat last week. And guess what? They've come from the bush. Can I say the Hicks have come from the bush? Tongue in cheek, of course. To come on the wireless, we've got Trevor Woolley, Michael Neville, and Steve and Vanessa Richards. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Darren.
Oh, it almost sounded like a Bee Gees harmony there. So, Trevor, we'll start with you first. The data used in the development application I raised with the CEO of Greyhound Racing New South Wales, Rob McCauley, that what you guys have been telling me ever since I started talking with you about this issue, that it is full of data that is not right. So it's not accurate, or it's not from the area closest to Martindale where they can get that available data. Can the planning panel, who are currently assessing this DA, believe in the credibility of that information that's in the DA?
Well, it's very difficult. The rainfall data they've used comes from Paterson, and we know that Paterson has a much more coastal climate, coastal rainfall. The rainfall here can't even be, or in Martindale, can't even be directly equated to Singleton, because sometimes the coastal rain doesn't make it over the hills from Singleton. And sometimes the western rain from Mudgee makes it to us and doesn't come into Singleton. Hmm. In the last 2 years, they could have been running their own weather station and been able to compensate for the rainfall difference between Paterson or Singleton and Martindale. They haven't even tried. The same with the wind. They could have had the wind data for the last 2 years in Martindale. Instead of that, they've used the wind data from Williamtown. Now, Williamtown is a very, very different wind. It's a coastal wind from Martindale, which is a hidden valley. Yeah. They haven't even tried to get local data and compensate for the data that they've used.
So the issue with the wind is that has a massive impact on what happens to the sound of the dogs barking in the Martindale Valley, which has its own, you know, weather system.
That's correct. And the not only the acoustic report but the odour report uses the wind data as well. And in the development application, the DA, they have the words under the windroses. They say a westerly wind blows most afternoons. Well, I don't know where they got that from, but it's not right.
What sort of wind is it, by the way?
Well, very often it's totally still.
Okay.
The wind either blows up the valley or down the valley. It doesn't blow any other direction because it can't.
I would suggest there's a bit of wind every day on that particular issue, but let's not go there. So talking about the data, Michael, I'll come to you. You have been keeping records for a long time now as far as what level the creek rises at the crossing, which Greyhound Racing New South Wales staff will have to use to get access to and from the property. And the data that you provided said between, I think it was March 21 and March this year, there were 75 days where the crossing wasn't passable. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Rob, in his last week in his interview, said that he didn't believe, and their hydrologist also didn't believe, there were 75 days where you couldn't cross. But March 21, there was a major flood, and there was 14 days when you couldn't cross then. After that, every time you had 10 or 15 mils, it'd be up for another 2 or 3 days. And then there was flooding again in November, and in December, half of November, I think it was 14 days, not all at once, but in 2 or 3 certain rises that you couldn't go through. And then again in March, there was another major flood. When I talk major flood, it's 4.6 metres high at that crossing and 60 to 80 metres wide. Mm. It takes days for that to come back down.
Yeah, well, you've shown me the photos.
Yeah, that's right. And even this month, well, in July, there was another flood as big as the 2007 flood, which was meant to be one in a 100-year flood. And again, for another 12 days, you couldn't cross in July. And presently, just with 36 more mils of rain from Thursday until last night, I didn't check it the day, but it's not down much further. You wouldn't cross it in a four-wheel drive as well. So these days are adding up again this year.
So how does it make you feel when they say they don't believe your data? Like, it's not like you've made it up.
No, that's right. I've got some photographic evidence, but you know, it's typical for them. They do all their data from their desktop. Their hydrologists, who I believe wouldn't have never been in the valley, or maybe if they have, they certainly didn't spend any time here. So they're just doing desktop models, and in that data they used in their DA, they used modelling from the McDonald River, which isn't even on the Martindale Creek. It runs down the Putty. So yeah, they're not even using the Martindale Creek as their model.
Are you concerned that the panel may make a decision based on this inaccurate data?
Well, I hope the panel doesn't really can see through that data. I mean, it's whitewashed fairly well right through in every aspect that they've just, you know, they've bought the property and trying to make the data to fit. They've got 1,000 pages of data, but that doesn't help if the data's incorrect. I just believe, look, I think they're not looking at the long-term the long-term aspect of this property. I think they just want to get it off the ground. Once they've ticked that box, Greyhound New South Wales, they'll be happy to see it fold, because I don't believe that they've got the long-term, the longevity of this project in mind.
Mm. Trevor, back to you. How can you get a fire truck in and out with that crossing impassable? Or can you?
You can't. If the high flow in the creek, you can't get across the creek, the paddocks are going to be wet, you can't drive a fire truck across there.
Yeah, and if it's so wet, you'd be bogged anyway, wouldn't you?
That's exactly right, yes.
So where does that leave the community of Martindale?
Well, when a creek is coming up, we try to get the fire trucks out and we put them on private property.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we're also trying to get a shed on the other side of the creek, but that's a long-term objective.
Yep.
But sometimes we don't get it right. Last Thursday when it rained, we only got 36 mil. I didn't think the creek was coming up, but everything is so wet that it did come up. We got it wrong. I've only been here for 32 years. We got it wrong.
Mm. Geez, why didn't you come earlier?
That's exactly right, yes.
Mm. So that similar question to you, Trevor. How concerned are you that a decision may be made based on information which you guys are clearly saying is wrong?
Well, we hope, as Michael said, we're hoping that the panel can see through the fact that the data is incorrect. We've certainly pointed it out fairly strongly to them.
We talked about the fire truck getting in and out before, but does this property and enterprise present any further fire risk?
Yes. Interestingly, last week Rob said it didn't increase the fire risk by 1 degree. But in fact, most fires are started in the valley floor by human activity. They're started by slashing, welding, construction, electrical faults, cars in long grass, wheels falling off car trailers or any trailer. They're the most numerous fires, and they're also the most dangerous because they can start 5 minutes burning away from any facility, any house. Mm. And if a fire starts 5 minutes burning away from the Greyhounds, that's really serious, and it might be started by their own slasher.
Basically, that access is even more critical than I suppose you would think on the surface, because you need to be able to get in and out to respond to whatever risk there is.
Not only that, but their own response in the first 5 minutes, in the first 10 minutes, is critical. They have 400 fenced-off enclosures. Movement around all of that is very, very hard. So they actually need a hose reel available from inside every enclosure. And there's nothing in the DA that says anything like that. They just say they'll provide some firefighting gear.
So with the crossing itself that we're talking about, Steve, you noticed recently there were some works going on there. I've spoken to the council, and of course I asked Rob last week if they've been doing any works at the creek, and they've both said no. So Have you been able to find out who was doing the works there?
No, we haven't been able to find out who did the works, but the work was carried out on the 15th of the 7th. There was multiple truckloads of gravel going into the crossing and were being poured into the creek, and also large boulders were being dropped in the creek. Yeah, we're perplexed as to who might have carried out such extensive work.
And I would imagine they'd need some sort of approval, or at least to alert council and whatever, maybe a water authority, that they're doing that work, whoever that was.
Yeah, definitely. Any work that's got to be carried out in the creek, you've got to get the appropriate permits and work permits and such, because it's in an environmentally sensitive area.
And I believe a number of complaints have been put into the relevant authorities, and there's some investigations going on into it.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Okay, we'll have to see what comes of that, but certainly the council said they weren't there doing any work, and Greyhound Racing New South Wales said they weren't there doing any work either. You're listening to Hunter Valley Today with Darren Catruppi, and my guests are Trevor Woolley and Steve Richards and Vanessa Richards and Michael Neville. Going to take a break and we'll continue our conversation on 981 2NM. You're listening to Hunter Valley Today with Darren Catruppi, continuing our conversation with the residents of Martindale responding to the answers given to us by Greyhound Racing New South Wales last week when Rob McCauley, the interim CEO, who's now been appointed the real CEO, permanent, late last week, joined me to answer questions that the residents had. Moving to the traffic assessment, Vanessa, I don't know where this is at, because you guys have told me that they did the traffic assessment at the wrong end of Martindale Road, yet Rob last week said that they had travelled the full distance of the road and that everything's hunky-dory.
Martindale Road is over 20 kilometres long.
Yeah.
Part of Martindale Road is a thoroughfare, and some people in the area will know it as forming the back road from Jerry's Plains around when the Golden Highway is closed. But that's only part of the way. The other end of Martindale Road is actually a no-through road, and the road becomes progressively narrower as you get down towards the end of the no-through road. They've done their traffic assessment at the end of Martindale Road, where it is the thoroughfare, where it joins Yarrawa Road, so 19 kilometres away from the facility, in the where the Crown Road enters the facility. So that's the site of their traffic assessment, 19 kilometres away, and where it is a thoroughfare road. And their traffic assessment had between 700-800 car vehicle movements a day in that section of the road. We've undertaken our own traffic assessment about three kilometres from the entrance to the facility, and there were 60 vehicle movements a day. So in their DA, they suggest that there's not going to be a substantial increase in traffic, and that's certainly something that Rob had mentioned in his interview. But when they do their percentages, they're talking about 7% of the 600 vehicle movements a day. That's actually 100% of the 60 vehicle movements a day. So there is going to be a substantial increase in traffic on the road. And the fact that they have taken that traffic assessment from the wrong end of the road would appear that they have either made a very, very significant mistake, or they have possibly tried to make the assessment look more favourable in their direction.
Again, this points to your concerns over the accuracy of the data that's contained with the DA.
Absolutely, and we're concerned that the beautiful glossy brochures that are submitted to the panel to look at are certainly not telling the same story as what the locals who live there have been able to say, but we don't seem to be heard.
So, Vanessa, at the panel public meeting there a couple of weeks ago at Denman, the consultant for Greyhound Racing New South Wales said very loudly and clearly that Greyhound Racing New South Wales had agreed to pay to upgrade Martindale Road as per what was in the reports. But then when I asked Rob that last week, he said, no, they're just having discussions. So what is it?
That's a really good question, and a question that we'd really like the answer to. Certainly some of the residents have believe that this may be a vehicle for Martindale Road to be upgraded. But at a council meeting that the residents had with Muswellbrook Shire Council earlier this year, Muswellbrook Council made it clear that there were no plans for a major upgrade to Martindale Road. In the DA, the improvements that Greyhound Racing New South Wales have proposed to Martindale Road, it's not the 20 kilometres length of the road. It's basically in the last 4 kilometres prior to the facility entrance, they have basically indicated 3 50-metre sections and 1 100-metre section of passing places and some improvements to the intersection of the Crown Road entrance to the facility. And that's it. That's all that is proposed in the DA in terms of improvements to Martindale Road.
Playing devil's advocate, that would improve the safety of the road in that part at least.
In that part at least, but there's still 19 kilometres that people are going to need to travel to get to those points.
Yep, absolutely. Michael, back to you. The issue was raised by Greyhound Racing New South Wales in my interview last week about this is going to be no different to the horse stud that was operating there as far as movements. Now, you're a neighbour. You're directly right next door. What sort of activity was there with the horse stud?
Well, the horse stud, when it was running, it only had 3 full-time staff.
Yep.
And they actually lived on farm, so they only went to town, you know, there would only be one vehicle a day going in and out of town there. There were some delivery vehicles and seasonal horse trucks. They only had 18 to 20 mares that they'd take to stud every year. So there's only one truck out for each one of those mares, maybe 2 trucks out. So, and that's just seasonal from September through to October. So the difference between 3 staff living on farm and 25 to 30 staff driving in and out every day, I'd say it's a major change in vehicles on the road.
And, of course, that, as you said, is seasonal, whereas this is non-stop.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think you can compare what anything between the old stud, farm horse stud, and what this facility will be in a number of reasons. They keep coming back to it saying, you know, it's not going to make much change to the valley, but it's a big change compared.
Why this site? Were you happy with the answer that was given last week?
There's a couple of answers that they've given. I believe they bought the sight unseen, basically. Well, no, they did see it, but they didn't do any prior research.
I certainly can't give any veracity to how much research they did before they brought the property, because only they know the answer to that.
But in their response to submissions, they actually said that they bought the place to minimise the number of affected neighbours, not because it was in a prime location or logistically in a good spot. They said just to minimise the number of affected neighbours. But then when we actually spoke to some of their people at one of the days in Denman, they said, oh, we bought the place because it's a nice, quiet place for the dogs. So I don't even know which one it is, but either way, it's not because it's in a logistically perfect place.
Just to go a bit further with what Michael just said, it's really important to remember that the needs of a grazing animal is really, really different to the needs of an intensive kenneled animals. And to compare the two is like chalk and cheese. The other thing is the operational plan submitted as part of the DA states quite clearly all the activities that are going to be undertaken as part of this development, that the 20 carers, a timetable for their daily activities in the care of these 400 dogs. Now, the big issue is that, yes, the operational plan can be amended and changed in times of, you know, so-called emergency in terms of limited access due to flood or whatever. But what we're saying is that this flood isn't a one-off emergency. This access is impeded on a regular basis. It's 20% of the time. And we're even talking, even in some of the drought years, that there were flash creek rises when there was rains up in the tops, which made the crossing inaccessible, but we were still dry down here in the valley. And what that means is that 20% of the time that this facility is going to be operated by only skeleton staff. So this could be for up to 12 days at a time. So then how can we ensure that the dogs are going to be kept clean and quiet and all of those activities that they've just put in their DA saying how this is part of their daily operations of managing this facility and now no longer relevant 20% of the time? It can't go both ways.
Vanessa, what about this causeway? There was mention in my interview with Rob McCauley last week about raising it by a foot if needed.
Yeah, that was a really interesting comment because there were a number of scenarios put forward in the DA as potential options in terms of management of that access. But at the end of the day, their proposed access was, and I quote, maintaining the existing access road and causeway as it currently exists. So if the plan is now to raise that causeway, then that actually needs to be in the DA. And it's not.
Well, there's another question for Greyhound Racing New South Wales to answer.
And the panel.
Trevor, what's your concern that may happen in the end with this facility? Let's assume it's approved. Is it then, you know, you just have to learn to be neighbours, or what are your concerns?
Once it's approved, yes, we have to learn to be good neighbours in some form or another. And how good they are as neighbours will depend on the outcome. But longer term, my concern is what would happen if the facility proved unviable, or in fact if something happened to Greyhound Racing New South Wales. What would happen to the facility if they had to sell it? Massively overcapitalised with $33 million worth of dog kennel, who would buy it? The only people who could buy it would be dog breeders. And they are not all the promises we've been made by Greyhound Racing New South Wales about how wonderfully they care for the dogs and how quiet the dogs are will all go out the window, and we may end up with 400 bitches having litters and all the resultant noise.
Have you guys got a feeling on how long it's going to take to find out what's happening, what the decision is?
We've been told that the panel may make a decision by December, but we don't really know very much about that.
Guys, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
This is Hunter Valley Today on 981 2NM.